The God who created the heavens and the earth keeps starting the world all over again with people who will listen to God's adventurous call and trust in God's faithful presence. God did it with Noah when the violence of Cain murdering his brother Abel escalated to cover the whole world. And now from the Tower of Babel and the scattering of peoples into many languages, God begins once again with a pair named Abram and Sarah and the calling of a people who will be named Israel. God calls Abram and Sarah out from familiar territory as wanderers, not knowing where they are to go. Such is the nature of biblical faith, responding to God's life-changing call, stepping off the map into the unknown, making a new road with God by walking into uncertainty, trusting God's voice into a more faithful, transforming life. In other words, all the things that scare most of us to death. For Abram and Sarah, faith was trusting God's threefold promise of descendants who would become a great nation, through whom all the families of the earth would be blessed in a land God would lead them to inhabit. This was the covenant God made with Abram and Sarah. They didn't have much by way of beliefs or temples, commandments, or guarantees that everything would turn out fine. They didn't even have a Bible. Just a compelling inner voice that would not be quiet. A voice they trusted to be God, leading them into a life of faith. A voice we would call the Holy Spirit. In their stories and in the stories of their descendants, we see just how tangled and complicated, rewarding and laughable the life of faith can be. The journey begins as Abram and Sarah rise from their homeland and follow God's call into the unknown. When they arrive in their new land, it is in the midst of drought and famine. A family crisis ensues with Abram's nephew Lot over who gets what of this new land. Abram graciously lets Lot choose. Lot greedily chooses the rich plains of the Jordan. Abram gets the rocky desert leftovers. But that's all right. Abraham knows he can risk being big-hearted and open-handed because he knows God is that way and that God can be trusted. There were times, however, Abram and Sarah grew impatient and took matters into their own hands. Haven't we all done that from time to time? We think to ourselves, well, if God's not going to act, I will. And we usually end up doing something foolish. It seemed like our only choice at the time, but it often brings trouble. It happened in the life of Abram and Sarah because they believe God has promised them a child. But years pass and no baby. They're growing discouraged about the prospects, fearful they will die childless. So they take matters into their own hands. In a practice common in the ancient world, Sarah invites Abram to take Hagar, her maidservant, and conceive a child with her. Abram obeys his wife and does so. Hagar conceives and bears a son named Ishmael. Abram loves Ishmael. But Sarah grows jealous. Who could have seen that coming? And she sends Hagar and her boy packing. Abram grieves the loss. Grief often comes when faith grows impatient, when someone acts out of jealousy, when we take matters into our own hands. Abram and Sarah grow increasingly discouraged. Then one day, three visitors come to the door of their home. The text tells us that the three are, in fact, the Lord. Sometimes God comes in threes. Just ask Todd and Mary Kay Smith. The three visitors announce that they will come back again in the spring, and by that time, Sarah will have a son. Sarah is 90. Abram is 100. Old enough to call Charlie J. Sonny Boy. Neither of them hardly candidates for parenthood. They both fall on their faces laughing. Wouldn't you? They're living on the border of the possible and the impossible, which is often where faith is most alive. Well, guess what happens? Come spring, the long-awaited child is born. Faith delivers, pun intended. Sarah laughs all the way from Carlisle Place to the maternity ward at Atrium Navicent. And when she gives birth to that miraculous boy, he is placed in her arms and she says, "I will call him Isaac," which means laughter, "for God has made laughter for me." The only one not laughing is the bureaucrat at the Medicare office trying to process a claim for labor and delivery. From this point on, Abram and Sarah will be called Abraham and Sarah. A change of name in the Bible that we see repeatedly often accompanies a change of character or identity. And while there seems to be no real difference in the meaning of Sarah's name, Abram's new name means ancestor of a multitude, reflecting the promise God made to Abraham to make him the father of many nations. As Isaac grows up, we're given a story thick with disturbing mystery. Laughter enters a dark abyss. We don't have the time to dive very deep into it this morning, but it was common in Abraham's day for parents to sacrifice their children to the gods in order to appease the anger of the gods. The day comes when Abraham believes he hears God call him to sacrifice Isaac. So he takes Isaac up a mountain only to learn that this God does not require human sacrifice. Abraham found a ram up on the mountain to offer instead. Then the day comes when the joy of laughter returns and Isaac meets his bride, Rebekah. It's one of the most beautiful love scenes in all of literature. Take the time to read it this week in Genesis 24. From Isaac and Rebekah come twin sons, Jacob and Esau. Like Josh and Heather, God comes in twos for Isaac and Rebekah. Esau is born first, Jacob arrives second, clutching the heel of his brother. And so he is named Jacob, which means in Hebrew, heel grabber. I did learn this week that in 1920s America, the name Jacob came to mean cool or awesome. So hold on to that, Jacob. But in ancient Hebrew, it meant heel grabber. To catch someone by the heel is to trip them up. The meaning of Jacob's name foreshadows his cunning character. Esau is daddy's favorite. Jacob is mama's boy. Esau, as the firstborn son, is entitled by culture to special honor and double the material blessings from his father. Both birthright and blessing are due him. One day, Jacob's in the kitchen cooking a red stew. Esau comes in from the field famished and begs Jacob for some of the stew. In order to keep from starving to death, Jacob makes Esau promise his birthright to Jacob in exchange for some food. Then Jacob sets out to steal the one irreversible blessing of the father reserved for the firstborn. What a stand-up guy. With his mother's help, Jacob tricks his blind and aging father into believing that he is Esau, and Isaac bestows the one and only blessing upon Jacob. When Esau finds out, his grief over losing his father's blessing turns and grows into a murderous rage, and he swears to kill his brother. Lesson to parents: don't play favorites. And bless all your children with your unconditional love, not just the child who lives your dream. Mama Rebecca gets word of Esau's vow and plans Jacob's escape. She sends him far away to her brother's house. En route, Jacob stops for the night. He falls asleep and begins to dream. One might have expected a nightmare, disturbing and guilt-ridden. Instead, God gives him a glimpse of heaven, with a ladder shining with God's own light, stretching from heaven to earth, angels without number ascending and descending. Instead of the blessing out Jacob deserved, God gave him the same threefold blessing God had given Abraham of land, descendants, and blessing. Oh, the scandalous grace of God. Jacob makes his way to Uncle Laban's house, where he marries two sisters, Rachel and Leah, who enter a contest with each other to see who can produce the most sons. They even give their maidservants to Jacob to ramp up the competition. By the time the dust and bed feathers have settled, Jacob is the proud, not to mention exhausted, father of 12 sons and a daughter. And that's how we get the names of the 12 tribes of Israel. You just gotta love the Bible. What a Netflix series that would make. Well, the time comes for Jacob and his family to leave Laban's house and return home to the land God had promised them. When Jacob arrives at a river called Jabbok, he hears that his brother Esau is on the way to meet him with 400 men. Jacob sends the rest of his party ahead with peace offerings, guilt gifts for his brother. Maybe they will cool Esau's anger, or at least buy some time. They say a guilty conscience is better than no conscience at all. It's now evening and Jacob is all alone. As he wades out into the stream, we're given witness to a divine encounter shrouded in mystery. There in the dark, something hits Jacob. In one place we're told it's an angel, in another place we're told it's a man, and in yet another we are told it is God. Whatever, whomever, this sparring partner, its force throws Jacob into the water. There's a fierce wrestling, agonizing, decisive, and long, all night long. Near dawn, Jacob's opponent reaches out and touches Jacob's hip, wrenching it out of its socket. Jacob grabs hold of this holy other. And at the end of the wrestling match, the holy other says, "Your name shall be Jacob no more, but Israel, for you have fought with God and others and have prevailed." Then this holy other blesses Jacob, now Israel, and departs. Jacob never got the name of this holy other, but he knew the one whom he held on to that night and the one who had hold of him. He gives a name to the place of the struggle, Peniel, which means face of God. "For I have seen God face to face," he says, "and my life has been saved." The episode ends with the words, "As the sun rose, Jacob passed Peniel, limping on his hip." Jacob has been blessed and wounded. Something has died and something has been born. Jacob has become Israel. As Jacob hobbles fearfully toward his brother Esau, bowing 7 times in humility, Esau runs to meet him, grabs him around the neck, and kisses him. And Jacob speaks to his brother perhaps the most beautiful words of reconciliation ever uttered. "To see your face is like seeing the face of God." And they embrace, weeping. Jacob meets God in the river and in his brother's arms. And God's name, God's face, is grace. The book of Genesis concludes with the story of Jacob's 12 sons. Just like his own parents, Jacob plays favorites. The favorite's name is Joseph. Joseph shares with his brothers a dream he had that he would one day rule over them. That word from Daddy's favorite does not sit well. They consider killing him, but decide instead to sell him into Egyptian slavery. As a slave and interpreter of dreams, Joseph rises to prominence in the house of Pharaoh. When famine comes, his brothers travel to Egypt for food. They come face to face with their brother Joseph. With power to harm and enslave, Joseph instead forgives them, and in tears they all embrace. The wild beauty of these incredible family of origin stories shines the miraculous light of truth that in the midst of deceit, treachery, and extreme family dysfunction, it is possible by God's grace to find forgiveness, reconciliation, and the blessing we all crave. The choice we have when harmed is revenge or reconciliation. In revenge, we stoop to imitate the person who hurt us. In reconciliation, we rise to imitate the God who forgives us and blesses us even when we don't deserve it. And in those times when human reconciliation is not necessarily wise or even possible because the wounds are too deep and raw, we can at least choose to live in peace instead of hatred and cruelty. Our calling on the risky, adventurous journey of faith into the unknown is to trust and obey the God who made us and loves us, the God of saving grace, grace to heal our deepest brokenness, mysterious encounters of grace that leave us often wounded, but always blessed. And through it all, we'll find that our covenant God is faithful. And we will sing with all the saints of God, often through tear-filled eyes, "Great is thy faithfulness. All I have needed, thy hand has provided. Great is thy faithfulness, Lord, unto me." Thank you. Thank you. That's all right. That's all right. I'm just sorry others didn't join you. If you've never decided to take the journey of faith, God invites you to do so this morning. The place to start is with a willingness and a commitment on your part to follow Christ and to place your life in His hands. His grace will forgive you and will empower you to take the journey to which you are called. If you're searching for a community of faith to journey with, the arms of our church are open, and we will gladly and welcome, gladly and warmly receive you. Our hymn of response is hymn 619, Blessed Assurance. Any decision you feel led to make, I will be here at the front to you receive. Let us stand together and sing and respond.